Thanks to the organizers for the invitation, and my apologies for, shall we say, a quick visit, but it's the first week of classes in the spring quarter at UCSD. So I didn't really know what to present at this meeting, so I thought I'd present some my thoughts on a problem I think about from time to time, and namely the question of dealing with nonlinear interactions in wave kinetics. So, and the problem really falls at kind of the intersections of two subjects that are dear to my heart and dear to a lot of people's heart. Subject number one being the theory of phase space density granulation and Vlasov turbulence, which I think is a good subject to discuss in a meeting on kinetic theory, and this was, I think, a subject basically pioneered by Tom Dupree in the 70s and 80s, and no doubt it will infuriate various people in the audience, but I don't think there's really been a conceptual advance since then. It's been somewhat dormant. The other subject is something a lot of us suffer with, particularly those of us in plasmas and fusion, namely the problem of applications, the problem of turbulence with interactions of disparate scales, and the problem of how modulational instability is saturated. And sort of some of our perspective on this came out of some recent work on a review article on zonal flows I did with T.S. Hahn and the Itos. And I've worked on this subject with many people, some of whom are listed here and some of whom are even here. So given this sort of strange agenda that really needs an extended, and strange subject too, needs an extended motivation. So I'll talk a little bit about the problem of disparate scale interaction and nonlinear modulations, and it's interesting to look at this in a certain parameter space of the Kubo number and the stochasticity parameter or Chirikov parameter in the problem. And this raises the question of what do you say about turbulent trapping of wave packets? And this then makes a natural connection to Vlasov turbulence. So I'll then talk about the theory of granulations in Vlasov turbulence, which is an very interesting subject, I think. Sort of why you have to worry about granulations, the basic ideas. I think the most important thing is not just that you have another animal in the zoo of fluctuations, but this animal can actually impact relaxation and instability processes. And I'll talk about the theory and the extensions to higher dimensions a little bit. And then we'll talk about the impact of this story on wave kinetics and sort of the relation between the problems of 1D Langmuir turbulence and zonal flow drift wave interaction and the 1D Vlasov problem. There's close to, not exactly, but certainly close to a mapping of one of these onto the Vlasov problem. What granulations mean in the wave population. And then in particular, hearkening back to my comment on relaxation, talk about how sort of different momentum exchange processes can give you a new route to Langmuir turbulence, different from the classic one, say, that you'd read in Sagdeyev and Galeyev or Zaharov's papers or anything. It's very important, I think. A lot of this is about the similarity between the two problems. So I'll also discuss some important differences, which really boil down to caustic points and caustic curves. But even in one dimension, caustic points, or what I would call ray accumulation points, give one some pause for thought. Okay, so the problem of disparate scale interaction is ubiquitous, and by disparate scale interaction in turbulence means you have some bath or prescribed mess of short wavelength, high frequency modes, and you're interested in what happens at low frequency, long wavelength, okay? And you sort of have two populations interacting with each other. that basically the short one, by its radiation pressures and stresses and so forth, excites the long one modulates the short one. This is a ubiquitous problem in plasma physics. Example, of course, is the time immemorial Langmuir turbulence problem, where the short E is the plasmon and the long E is the ion acoustic wave. Then you have the drift wave turbulence zonal flow interaction problem, where the short wavelength are the drift waves and the large scale is the zonal flow. The dynamo problem is in some sense a member of this category. Again, it's a question of, does a large scale field somehow, is a bath of small scale turbulence in some sense unstable to a large scale field? And the DNLS and its various derivatives, no pun intended, that our organizers and I and many other people have worked on in the context of the Alfvén wave problem is also, I think, goes on the list. This type of problem is of interest because, of course, it addresses the question of large-scale self-organization. And another reason why this is popular, it's probably easier than the conventional turbulence problem. And the reason for it being easier is that you have the leverage of some sort of tacit small parameter, namely that's related to the disparate scales. The scale separation can give you, allow, for example, a kind of envelope formalism, which is very popular, or it can allow you to define an adiabatic invariant and play games with wave kinetics, which is also a very handy way of making progress. One of the things, you know, in trying to sort out the billion and one papers that exist on the zonal flow problem, this is just one of the things on the list, we found it very useful to observe the state of affairs in these problems in a two-dimensional space, with the axis, one of the axis being the Chirikov parameter. So if you think of terms of rays, it would be the width of the resonances, say, for the phase velocity of the modulator with the group velocity of the modulatee, okay, divided by the spacing in resonances. And this just basically defines, are the dynamics in some sense coherent or stochastic, okay? The other parameter is, in deference to my Japanese collaborators, is dubbed the Kubo number, but as really many people have come up with this, you can think of it as basically the ratio of the autocorrelation time of the pattern of structures to the bounce time of, say, a ray or a wave packet in a single structure. And it's in some sense a measure of the degree of self-trapping that there is in the problem. So if for example, if K is small, that means that's sort of like a quasi-linear limit. If K is, when S is bigger than 1, if K is large, that means you have kind of a trapped structure. And, of course, there is a relation between the autocorrelation time and the spectral structure that goes to define the Chirikov parameter, but they're not necessarily, it's a relation, but it's not necessarily the same thing. And of course, the real fun comes with the question of how do you handle cases where both these parameters start to get of order unity, as you'll see. Excuse me?
Could you remind me what your definition of S is?
Omega divided by Q. If you look to the top of the page, Gregory, omega is the frequency of the large guys and Q is the wave number of the large guys. So it is the spacing of phase velocities of the modulator field. Okay, so it's just as what you presumably learned in school. It's basically, you know, the Chirikov parameter that you encounter in quasi-linear theory. So it's interesting to look at the universe of these problems in this plot. Kind of tells you what you already know, but vacant spots in the plot, I think, are quite how shall I say it, quite interesting. So let's start with Langmuir turbulence, which is everybody's favorite of these disparate scale interactions. So we all know this. So basically you have a packet of plasmons evolving in density perturbations associated with an ion acoustic wave. So you basically would have either an envelope equation for the plasmons or, like I wrote it here, a wave kinetic equation if you stick at the Eichner level, and you would have an ion acoustic wave equation in the presence of the the ponderomotive force or, radiation stress of the plasmons. And it's very interesting, though, to plot. This is there's a ton of work on this going back, I guess, to Rudikov and Sagdeyev, and even before Zaharov. It's very interesting to plot the various things. And this, of course, is my typical, very crude plot. But, down near the origin, where both K and S are small, you have sort of simple perturbation theory, coherent parametric interaction. If you go out, at small stochasticity, but making K larger, so you start to trap rays, you run into kind of like the BGK approach to wave kinetics that Kaw and Dawson did some work on this. And you also find Langmuir solitons out there. If you go to K goes to infinity, so you have sort of arbitrarily strongly self-trapped system, this would correspond to Langmuir collapse. So Mr. Zaharov, shall we say, is somewhere, at K goes to infinity, because you have the formation of a finite time singularity, which is precisely why that is so interesting. If, however, at low K, in other words, so short autocorrelation time, but ray chaos, and you go out here, on the plot, you have what's sort of the conventional idea of induced diffusion, which is quasi-linear wave kinetics, the sort of thing you would get from doing quasi-linear theory on the wave kinetic equation. And what strikes you as interesting when you draw this picture is the large sort of vacant spot of terra incognita, so to speak, that sort of sits, around K and S, a little bit less, a little bit larger than one, and getting very large. And this corresponds to a sort of a case of which, there's been a little work from Yankov on the problem of the soliton gas. There's been some nice work in the, in the subsonic limit for Langmuir turbulence by Diachenko and Zaharov and collaborators, but it's few and far between and quite limited, okay? And you kind of wonder what's going on here. And this would be a case where the dynamics could be stochastic, but there would be an element of coherency as well. And this also, you can kind of draw the same picture for the zonal flow problem. It's rather amusing. I should say for the zonal flow problem, of course, by here I mean the simple manifestation of it, and not keeping the gravitational pull of Venus on TFTR and other things that are very popular. But very simply, you have a Reynolds stress of the short wavelength drift wave turbulence. The Reynolds stress is quadratic, so it's necessarily proportional to the intensity of the drift waves, and this drives a large-scale flow. And then, of course, you need a wave kinetic or envelope equation for the drift waves in the presence, of course, of the flow being driven. And again, you can plot the universe in this. I mean, if you down near the origin or various sort of coherent parametrics problems, the stuff that Liu Chen and, of course, going back to Sagdeyev, Shapiro and Shevchenko did, sort of coherent interaction. If you go up again to larger Kubo number, but still in a coherent picture, you get BGK wave kinetics that Andre and I did, and independently Predom and Kaw and a group did. At K go to infinity, you might find singular shear layers, kind of like a kind of one-dimensional collapse structure, which there's been some recent work on. Over here, at low values of K, but large values of stochasticity. You have kind of the beloved regime of random shearing, which is something I've pushed, probably the relevant regime for many fusion problems. But again, we have a large vacant spot up here. And this the importance of this vacant spot that I think anyone who worked on the problem knew about was recently emphasized in a paper by Bălescu in 2003. And, you know, he didn't, uncharacteristically of Bălescu, he didn't tell us how to solve the problem, but he did indicate its presence and importance. And it's quite relevant to the zonal flow saturation problem. You could think of it as kind of marginal trapping of a wave packet in the zonal flow field, for example. Of course, as I say, he didn't tell us what to do with it. So this, and I mean, this is something I had worried about before with Andre, got me thinking again about this problem. And the prototype of all, I could say, in the spirit of the Iraq War, the mother of all turbulent trapping problems is the one-dimensional Vlasov turbulence problem. And to the phrase turbulent trapping goes back to Dupree's and Katamtsev's pioneering work in the early 70s, where you have the Vlasov equation and Poisson's equation, and you consider fluctuations about the average distribution function. And you can immediately observe, you know, a high degree of similarity between the one-dimensional Langmuir problem and the Vlasov problem. The only real difference is, in some sense, the Poisson equation now, as it were, becomes dynamic. All right, it's not quite so convenient as the traditional Poisson's equation. Basically, the connection between the radiation pressure of the plasmons and the density perturbations comes through a time-dependent, you know, equation, which is essentially the ion acoustic equation. And again, in the simple manifestation of the zonal flows, it's much the same story. Now, this is at minimum a 2D problem. However, the zonal flows are azimuthally symmetric, so ky is constant, the y component of the group velocity is constant, and there's no variation of the flows in the y direction. So it's again a kind of one-dimensional problem in x dynamically, ultimately, when you reduce it down. So both these problems, again, here the feedback is dynamic. Often the dissipation in the zonal flow problem is quite large, so in some sense that may actually make it easier than the Langmuir problem. But both these problems have a lot of similarity to the 1D Vlasov problem. And one of the things that's always fascinated me is lots of people work on Langmuir turbulence and zonal flows, and hardly anyone, you know, except a few stalwarts, works on Vlasov turbulence anymore. At least we've got a few of the stalwarts here. So that brings us then to reviewing the subject of phase-based density granulation in the 1D Vlasov problem, which I think is a good topic to discuss a bit for an audience at a kinetic theory meeting. And we all know from, you know, fluid turbulence that you have can have several types of fluctuations in turbulence. You can have waves, which are eigenmodes. You can have nonlinear structures, which are eddies or vortices. And the nonlinear structures can be kind of statistical in character, namely eddies, or more rigorous coherent solutions of the underlying nonlinear equations, such as vortices. And of course, the eddies at least go hand in hand with mode coupling. And also, you know, say from geostrophic turbulence, that these two characters of a fluctuation can be present at the same k. In other words, you can have waves, and generally do have waves, say, with a finite lifetime. Well, it's much the same in a Vlasov plasma, except the distinction has the added element of velocity dependence. At a given k, you can have a wave character to the distribution function, which is a coherent response, or you can have a what I would call a structure character to the distribution function. The jargon, and I must say the jargon in this business is hideously misleading, so that's part of the problem, I think. this thing working. I think your pointer just died. What? Well, you have better eyes than me. I can't see it. So, there we go. So anyway, the statistical character goes by the name of clumps, which in some sense is the Vlasov analog of an eddy, and the coherent character is in some sense goes by the name of whole, or it could just as easily be an excess, as you'll see, which is a self-bound state. A critical difference between the Vlasov and fluid problems is that the question of the basic scales, a wave-particle resonance enters. The basic scales of an entity in the Vlasov problem are set by the spatial scale and the width of the wave-particle resonance, which in a turbulent system with velocity space diffusion goes as d to the 1/3 over k to the 1/3, okay? This is kind of, or if you had a single coherent wave, would go as square root of q phi over m, which would be basically a trapping width. And I might add the phenomenon of trapping, and particularly say trapping in a case of many waves is the crux of the issue. Trapping in general is a very challenging thing in Vlasov turbulence. I think it looks like you had a lot of talks on how to do various fluid closures. I think I haven't seen a fluid closure that satisfactorily addresses trapping in any of its implementations. Trapping presents a major challenge. Now, basically, the gist of the granulation, you might ask, what's a granulation? And I might add, in my book at least, a granulation is a pure Vlasov effect, not related to discreteness, is basically the portion of the fluctuation that is not represented by a response to an electric field. More generally, you can write a total fluctuation as a response part, some response function, linear, nonlinear, whatever, times E, okay, plus an F tilde, which is everything else, which we'll call the granulation. So it's basically, you can break the total fluctuation into a phase coherent piece and an incoherent piece, okay? Incoherent means not phase locked to the particular phase of E and K and omega. This is fairly obvious, but of course the question is, how the hell do you calculate this, and what does it mean, and what is its impact on relaxation? I think it's pretty clear, but you still get questions. You know, why bother about this? Well, it is just to demonstrate. It is real, and the easiest way to see that is to simply look at the 2.1-time correlation function. And of course, all, you know, standard Navier-Stokes theories or turbulence theories are formulated at the correlation function level. And then look in transform to the relative and difference coordinates, or the average and difference coordinates. And the average coordinates give you slow dependence of the correlation function, and all the fast dependence is in the difference coordinates. And then if you just discard the slow dependence, you arrive at a two-point correlation equation such as this. Okay, and you notice this has the form of a time derivative plus some two-point or two-particle evolution operator on the correlation function is some driver, or you want to call it a source, due to gradient relaxation. I don't know whether this is giving out or my hand is giving out. The key point is that in the limit of point 1 goes to point 2, the two-particle evolution operator vanishes, okay? So while the source term, or the right-hand side, remains finite. So necessarily, the two-particle correlation function must diverge at small relative separations. It must get very big. And if, however, you look at the correlation function formulated with purely the coherent responses, the sort of thing you would do with, you know, quasi-linear theory broadly interpreted, and you can broaden the resonance, it doesn't really matter, okay, you find something that's finite, okay? So necessarily then, you know, the difference of something getting big and something that's finite.
Low tech,
thank you, yeah. Says there's something else at work in the problem, and that something else is the bit of the correlation function associated with the incoherent fluctuations and their cross term. Basically, you have a situation like this where the total correlation function is getting big and the coherent fluctuation correlation function is finite. Okay? So, and by the way, for those of you worried about divergence, it of course will be cut off by any residual dissipation. Even in the absence of dissipation, the divergence is logarithmic, so the physical observables, namely the density correlation function, then is finite at small scale. Okay, so there's no, you know, issue of violating the laws of physics or anything. The issues that do exist is how does the granulation impact relaxation and instability? It's not particularly, I think, surprising that you have granulations, although it seems to surprise some people. But what is interesting is it can affect how you get free energy out of the system. And then the other thing, of course, is how do you calculate something? The interesting, I think the most interesting question, and I think it pays here to ignore the time-honored problem of the bump on tail and look at the next slightly more complicated problem, like the current-driven ion acoustic mode, or ion acoustic system, is that it's very easy to show from the conservation of phase space density that the time rate of change, say, of the phase-space density correlation function is basically related to the velocity space flux that drives the relaxation in the system. And that, so there's a direct connection between granulation in dynamics and the relaxation process. And then if you then go to compute the granulations in the relaxation in the presence of granulations, you find our quasi-linear diffusion bit, but you also find a piece that, if it helps you think about it, can be associated with a friction or drag-like term. And this is explicitly due to the effect of granulations. And all the different bits are linked, and this has been overlooked by many in a rather straightforward way, the linkage being through Poisson's equation. And in particular, the potential that produces the electric fields is linked by screening to the incoherent fluctuation. So this type of linkage says that there is then a rather clear structural similarity, not identity, but similarity of this theory to the Lenard-Bilescu theory, okay, where the analog in the Lenard-Bilescu theory is, of course, explicit discreteness rather than a non-wave-like component of the fluctuations. And that analogy is a good one, so long as you don't take it too far. Namely, that in both the diffusion and the friction, there is a direct link via a resonance function between the particle velocity and the fluctuation phase velocity. So at least in one dimension, relaxation is a bit similar to collisions in one dimension, say, between a test particle and an ensemble of field particles, and of course that are self-consistently related. And it's useful to recall that in a stable one-dimensional plasma with discreteness, sort of, which is the Lenard-Bilescu case, the fact that in a one-dimensional collision that energy and momentum is conserved, for a like-particle collision, that immediately forces, at the level of freshman physics even, that the final state is equal to the initial state. So you get a immediate cancellation between the diffusion term and the like-particle piece of the drag. Okay? Interestingly, The same thing happens in granulations, with two caveats. I should say, you might say, well, we're interested in systems that aren't stable, but we're presumably interested in the saturated state, okay? So basically, in the saturated state, the waves have to be weakly oversaturated to take up the emission from the noise, okay? So in a sense, the coherent responses are still, in a sense, damped there, so the same reasoning applies. The two exceptions are in the case, one, if there is an interspecies drag that comes through the collective resonances. Okay, in particular, if you have the phase velocity, if you're looking at electrons that can resonate with the ions, you can easily find that the time rate of change of, say, or the rate of relaxation of the electron distribution function is proportional to the ion dissipation in the system. Okay, which is seemingly counterintuitive, but you'll, I think, will be clear in a second. And the reason why it's, I think, clear is instead of a statistical game, you can consider sort of a localized fluctuation or bump in the distribution function, which I call a hole. Dupree dubbed a hole for a deficit, and it could be an excess. You would call it, I used to call excesses blobs, but blobs has been taken up by something else in the fusion zoology, so I don't call it blobs anymore. I just call it an excess. And there's a nice little sort of back of an envelope calculation that you might actually believe, as opposed to the, you know, the full-blown crank of Leonard Bilescu-ology, that relates the time rate of change of the amplitude of this bump in the distribution function to the gradient of the distribution function, which is the free energy source, and the time rate of change of the momentum. And one of the things that's, of course, crucial is that you have a localized fluctuation in velocity, which is another contrast between the phase-based density granulation and conventional waves. And then, of course, this immediately links relaxation to the momentum budget. And you realize in the momentum budget you have three players. One is the electrons, one is the ions, and one are the waves. Okay? So if you have a single species problem, where you have, by definition, no ions, then you're back to something like the bump on tail, and in particular, you can only exchange momentum between the electrons and the waves, okay? And this gives you you could argue, is it very small or is it zero, but it's a weak modification of quasi-linear theory. If, however, you have two species, say the ion acoustic problem, you can have the wave momentum constant and exchange momentum directly off the ions. So it gives you effectively another thing in the budget to play with. So the time rate of change of the granulation intensity goes as dpidp, and that's a physical way of looking at this cancellation that occurs in the Leonard Bilescu theory. Okay, so you can see, in a sense, the rate of change of the ion momentum is necessarily proportional to the ion susceptibility bit of the imaginary part of the ion susceptibility bit in the dielectric function. And the implication of this is very interesting, because again, if you go back to the current-driven ion acoustic problem, although simple, is not academic, because it's very important potentially in collisionless reconnection, right, where you start by bringing two slabs of field together, you drive a current, and that, of course, microscopically means a shifted Maxwellian, so then you start to sit on the brink of current-driven ion acoustic problems. So looking at the current-driven ion acoustic case, you know, you have kind of two regions. Now, the first region is the wave region, up here, my number one. Okay, you'll note the shifted electron distribution function and the ion bit. The wave bit is, of course, what we all learned in school as our second example in plasma physics, the first one being, you know, Landau damping of a Langmuir wave, the second one is current-driven ion acoustic, right? So Number one is you have the electron, the waves can feel electron inverse damping or growth, but they're high enough up in phase velocity to avoid ion Landau damping. However, there is a second region, now that we've opened the door with the granulations, we could consider sort of granulations in region number two. Normally, you wouldn't worry about that because you overlap the ion distribution function and the waves are damped. However, those granulations can exchange momentum with the ions. And these two processes can have rather different thresholds depending on the drift strength, the mass ratio, and the temperature ratio. And there was some nice simulation work. It was done a long time ago now. It would be nice with all our improved techniques if it were revisited by Bob Berman, who was working with Dupree back in 83, who observed that, you know, if you initialized some small fluctuations, in the region where you overlap the two distribution function, the fluctuations would grow, and the electron distribution function would relax when the current-driven ion acoustic instability is otherwise stable, and this growth was nonlinear. Okay, so the message is not just that about granulations is not just that they are another animal in the zoo of fluctuations, but they give you potentially different ways of extracting expansion-free or available free energy in the system. And I think it would be very nice if there was a revisitation of some of this problem. Another interesting way of looking at the granulation problem is it resolves sort of a question I used to think about when I was a student. I mean, one of the things you learn is the way energetics in quasi-linear theory works. And the main energy theorem is that the total energy summed between the resonant particle kinetic energy density and the total wave energy density has to, you know, time rate of change of the sum has to be zero. And of course, as you all learned in school, the time rate of change of the total wave energy density is proportional to the growth rate of the waves. So it sort of says, well, what do you do about the time rate of change of resonant particle kinetic energies in a system that's stationary, but you don't let a plateau form, because that's the obvious way to deal with gamma going to zero. If you put df dv equals zero, everybody's happy. And the answer is granulations. Okay, and again, going back, much like we did with the momentum budget, you would have the time rate of change of the resonant particle kinetic energy density, the total wave energy density, and now a bit related basically to the collisionless electron-ion momentum exchange in a quasi-steady state, okay? Where this, if you wanted the root of this in the kinetic theory, this comes from the drag in the Leonard-Bilescu theory. So this allows a stationary rate of extraction of resonant particle energy from one species to another. And this, to me, is rather interesting because this is precisely what you want if you want an anomalous, a stationary, non-collisional exchange of momentum between electrons and ions in a problem, which is of great interest, for example, in collisionless reconnection. And that's not an idle comment, because there was one of the few simulations that addresses any of this. It was actually a more complicated geometry than this simple thing, but there was a simulation by Drake and Shea and co-workers a year or two ago looking at collisionless reconnection in the guide field, and lo and behold, holes were forming. In other words, phase space density granulation played seemed to be playing a role there and was clearly observed, although certainly it was just an observation. So then you might ask, okay, how do you calculate something? And there are two sort of ways of looking at things. One is a statistical approach, as I say, where You set up, as usual, equation for the two-point correlation function. It's exactly like what you do in a turbulent shear flow. So you have a triplet on one side and a relaxation of the gradient, a quadratic on the other. And of course, you're then in the mess of doing something about a turbulence closure theory, which is, particularly in a math meeting, I think we can safely call a black art. And even for those of us who, rush in where angels fear to tread, the direct interaction approximation for the Vlasov equation is just grotesquely intractable because you have really a double integro-differential type equation. The extra problems come from the fact you have velocity structure. So a simpler game is to just confine yourself to the case where the orbits are stochastic, and you can then derive a bivariate Fokker-Planck equation, which is this thing here written in the relative coordinates, and the relative diffusion then basically captures the fact that T12 has to go to zero at small separation. T12 is set by the orbit divergence, so ultimately the rate of two-particle correlation decay is related to the Kolmogorov-Sinai entropy for the for the system, right? You're just calculating the rate of exponential divergence of two orbits. The question of what's the correlation is a competition then between a divergence of the orbits, which destroys correlation, and relaxation of the average gradient, which in some sense drives it. Okay, and you then get a bunch. You can have adjacent particles or groups of particles that are closely separated in both space and velocity space, and these are called clumps. And in a sense, you can kind of view these as a case of turbulent trapping because they are going to be nearby, since they're close together initially, for many average orbit divergence times. A completely different way to look, I think, maybe a more physically, as usual, more physically satisfying but harder to compute anything with, is to look at the stability of an isolated structure in phase space, okay, so in velocity. So you write F as the usual Maxwellian plus some F twiddle, where F twiddle is a localized bit that you either add on or bite out of the total distribution function. And you ask, is that thing stable? So you can, you could put this on an exam in a basic course. It's sort of the analog of the genes instability calculation applied to kinetic theory, and is rather similar to the question of genes stability of a collisionless gas. And lo and behold, you find a competition between two effects. One is trivially predictable, namely its dispersion due to the fact you have a finite spread in velocity, and that dispersion tendency to disperse is due to, the finite delta V. It's a bit like the sound effect in the genes problem. But you also have a self-binding or attraction effect, okay, which you'll note. It depends on F tilde and epsilon, screening, okay? And this is sort of the electrostatic counterpart of self-gravity. You'll notice, too, again, this is the jargon problem. If epsilon is positive depressions in phase space density, self-bind, so you have holes. If epsilon is negative, then excesses in phase space density self-find, and with apologies to the edge turbulence people, you have blobs, okay? So you can view these granulations then as self-bound particle modes. And then at marginal stability, they are in some sense, can be viewed as sort of the analogs of genes equilibria in the Vlasov problem. The impact of these is that since one sign is preferred for self-binding, sort of a signature of this would be a definite skewness in the probability distribution function of the phase space density. And again, some simulations by Berman and Dupree in the mid-80s that have unfortunately never been revisited did find the growth of a definite skewness, and then upon visual examination of the the distribution function, the presence of holes was manifested. And one can start to talk, just as you talk about aggregation of vortices, say in 2D turbulence, you can talk about aggregation of holes and so forth, but that's not our, shall we say, our task here. Now, the other question you also get is, all right, this is all nice in one dimension, but, you know, real men do stellarator geometry with all sorts of hideous things. Well, with a strong magnetic field, the answer to this, I think, is with a strong magnetic field, the resonance dynamics remain surprisingly like one-dimensional, okay? Particularly at low frequency, you might get a drift term, say related to curvature drift, appearing in the way in the resonance function, but again in drift or gyrokinetics, particularly where the K-rho factors are small, the problem is, insofar as its phase-based structure is concerned, is very similar to the Vlasov problem. At high frequencies, of course, you get the cyclotron resonance, but the bottom line is much of the story persists. The perpendicular direction really doesn't care about the kinetics, except when the K-rho starts getting big. I mean, basically the drift, the flow speeds are E cross B drifts, and you notice E cross B drifts are wonderful for BGK modes because the E cross B drift, VE dot grad annihilates any function of V squared plus Q phi because, you know, grad phi cross Z dot grad phi is zero. So in some sense, the story is that in higher dimensions, you would have a parallel phase space vortex along the field line, a vortex in Z and V parallel, which you could view as one of these hole type things. And across the field line, you have a spatial vortex, which, for example, could be a modon, among other things. And there have over the years, by various authors, myself, but many, many others, have explored various applications of this type of game in more complicated geometries. And so I don't think this story, of course, there are important differences, but this story can't really be dismissed as an artifact of one dimension. How am I doing on time? Oh, I better speed it up. Okay, so, well, if you understood that, the rest is trivial. So the point then in wave kinetics, you're dealing with one-dimensional, you're dealing with modulational turbulence dynamics. So again, you know, say if we look at the Langmuir problem, you know, we have dispersive propagation, nonlinear refraction, and relaxation in the gradient in K of the population of plasmons. And we have a, you know, acoustic coupling, possibly dissipation corresponding to ion Landau damping, and plasmon radiation pressure. You also can have sub or supersonic acoustic coupling depending on whether omega over Q is bigger or smaller than CS. In the subsonic case, which is the case everybody loves, you get a nonlinear Schrodinger equation. In the supersonic case, okay, which is, I think, perhaps harder and more interesting, energy can be coupled to the acoustic waves and perhaps the ions. Okay, so there is more independent ion dynamics. And curiously enough, this is a far less intensively studied case than the subsonic case. Everyone likes to beat up on the subsonic case. If you have ray chaos, hearkening back to my picture at the our little, you know, K versus S picture at the beginning, the traditional approaches to this problem by soliton theory and all become dubious. Now, I mean, the question of how the Langmuir turbulence might grow, as I said, is a time-honored one, but again, with the zonal flow problem in mind, the question of what exactly the saturated state is not so well, I think, thought out. However, staring at this, it's pretty clear that you are going to have granulations in this problem, too. And the granulations are not granulations in phase space, but correspond in some sense to strongly localized wave packets. You can think of them as proto-cavitons or proto-anti-cavitons. You know, so everyone comes up with words like hole and caviton for when your things go down, but never were for when things go up. And the reason for that is, again, if you look at the triplet, you find essentially the same tendency of the two-point evolution operator to vanish. This is just a consequence of the Hamiltonian structure of the orbits and the fact that K is advanced and the fact that phase-based density or wave action here is conserved along rays. So it tells you that mode coupling enters the wave kinetic evolution via strongly localized packets, okay? The other thing is, since you now have granulations, they can enter the rate at which the plasmon distribution, shall we say, is relaxed or depleted, okay, and how it couples to ion acoustic scale structures. So again, if you go then to form the rate of it, look at the rate of evolution of the intensity of, or the distribution rather, of plasmons, you find, in addition to our familiar induced diffusion or random refraction in K-space from the density perturbation field of the ion acoustic waves, you find a friction term, okay? And that friction term then gives a potential new route to the growth of Langmuir turbulence. And it's interesting to look at the physics a bit of that friction term, so we will do that, and also answers the question of what exactly does that mean. So suppose you have, a bump in the population of wave action density, which you can think of, since that's basically a measure of the quanta density or quasi-particle density, you can think of that as a localized wave packet or proto-caviton. It's a self-bound structure, and you can kind of play the same game as you do in the Vlasov problem. You look at the screening via the ion acoustic response and the effect of that bump on the force, okay, induced on the ions, and you get, surprise, surprise, a interesting competition between the fact that the packet has some finite width in K, and also the packet tends to bind itself through a kind of self-radiation pressure. And again, you also find, interestingly enough, that the sign of whether a hole in N or a bump in N will self-attract changes on whether you're subsonic or supersonic. So it's a very interesting parallel with the Vlasov problem. And in particular, I think for the supersonic case, which is less heavily studied, it seems to me that holes or depressions in the plasmon radiation field tend to hang together. The other interesting thing, moving along smartly, is that you can look at a similar argument concerning rate of relaxation, okay? You can, from the conservation of wave action, you can look, and the fact that N tilde is localized within, plus or minus delta K of K naught, you can look at the time rate of change of N tilde squared. And ultimately, that is easily shown to be proportional to the net plasmon momentum in our localized wave packet. You recall that the plasmon momentum is simply is K times the action density integrated over the packet. So it says the time rate of change of N tilde squared is basically related to the gradient of N naught and the time rate of change of the plasmon momentum. However, in the momentum budget now, we have three players once again. We have the plasmons, we have the ion acoustic wave, and now we have potentially the ions as particles, since you could consider, say, for example, some damping by Landau damping of the ion acoustic wave. And you don't have to be afraid of that as you were before, since usually that's not considered because you just want to avoid ion Landau damping. So again, if you ignore the ion momentum change, so you have no dissipation input of momentum to the particles, you get the usual Langmuir turbulence case, where d by dt of the plasmons is equal to negative d by dt of the ion acoustic waves. I should say that the subsonic case is an even kind of more special case, because in that case you effectively balance the pressure and the radiation pressure. The ion acoustic wave is stationary, and the only dynamics is the adjustment of the plasmon, you know, energy density, so that that takes you to a single player. The supersonic case, however, that there is coupling of momentum to the ion acoustic wave and perhaps the ions, then. If, for example, you consider a case where the ion acoustic wave is damped, okay, so you would be operating in phase velocities that are a little different from the traditional ones in the Langmuir turbulence problem, the time rate of change of the ion acoustic wave momentum is zero. So again, the momentum balance is between the plasmons and the ions, okay? So this gives you then a new, potentially new route to growth and development of Langmuir turbulence, okay, where you couple energy in the region, plasmon energy in, you know, K-space regions that are normally damped by ion Landau damping, where you couple it to the ions. Yeah. Okay, I'm getting there. And if you carry that out, you can calculate the rate of change of the ion momentum easily, and you find, then it's interesting, the growth is proportional to negative dndk d quasi-linear ion, which is easy because the ions aren't trapped, times the gradient in V of the ion distribution function. Well, this is negative. Okay, you have a negative sign here. So the only way you can get growth of granulations is dn0dk positive. So this is very comfortable, because it tells you this approach is not getting any, giving you any free lunch, okay? Because we all know from very basic considerations of that a positive slope in the population of plasmons is required locally for growth in Langmuir turbulence. Another way to say it is a population inversion is necessary. It's not always the case, but for Langmuir waves it is. Much like the nonlinear growth in the ion acoustic problem, the packet growth is, however, related to ion Landau dissipation. So you get a route to Langmuir turbulence that's distinct from the usual Langmuir instability. And one of the things that amuses me is various people take pot shots at Langmuir turbulence on the basis of what about ion Landau damping, but it seems to me ion Landau damping might work for it instead of against it. It remains to be seen. I think it would be nice, again, to revisit some of these simple problems with modern computer technology. Theoretical approaches to this problem, bivariate Fokker-Planck equation for the correlation function of n tilde. This is too long to stick it on the view graph, but it's the same physics story of a competition between ray divergence due to ray chaos and relaxation of the average distribution function of n, okay, with a diffusion and a drag. Again, cancellations happen. You can easily generate correlation function, relaxation rate, etc. And you can get something when you have in the regime that you normally don't worry about in Langmuir turbulence. So again, you have a new route to relaxing the plasmon momentum distribution function. And finally, the single packet problem we've already talked about, so you can play the game there. Now, in my remaining second, I should say we've talked about similarities, but what about differences? One key difference is that the Vlasov plasma has, of course, the dispersion is always finite. In the wave packet problem, if the derivative of the group velocity with respect to k vanishes, you have ray accumulation points where there is basically no dispersion of neighboring rays. If you like, you can call them caustic points. This has no counterpart in the Vlasov problem. if you go to higher, you know, you just keep expanding to higher order, what it tells you is near those points the range of trapped rays increases and becomes a weaker fractional power of the perturbation strength, which is indicative of stronger interaction, where the weakly nonlinear theory that's used in this type of calculation becomes progressively more dubious. Seem to me that these points may be seeding soliton formation and maybe ultimately the root of the soliton gas picture, but I don't know. And of course, in higher dimensions, then you get real caustics, which are, you know, indicative of shock and front formation. So maybe let me conclude. As I say, I can discuss the details of the theory with people, that it's a bit of future plans, of course, is to clarify the ray accumulation or caustic problem and try to quantify the breakdown of weak turbulence theory, and be interesting to look at the statistics of these points. The other thing will be interesting is to try to accommodate diffraction and see what it does. And this would be a use of the geometrical theory of diffraction from Keller and friends, which is a very interesting thing to play with. It's a way of reconciling ray theory. And it'd be interesting to understand its impact on, you know, ray correlations. I also obviously interested in higher dimensions, and being a fusion physicist in my roots, I'm interested in understanding the quantitative implications for the zonal flow problem. Thank you very much.